Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Great Canadian Songbook, the show where we are counting down to the number one greatest Canadian album. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Wells. Well, I guess I'm technically your co-host because I would never want to undermine my great co-host, King Ginrich's authority.
No, you do most of the talking anyway, so I would completely understand.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a good thing.
There's a power imbalance here. No, it's good because you know what you're talking about, and I don't. So
I am simply the one who talks first. That's how you assert your dominance, I guess. Man, Keegan, how are you doing? I know we took a week off, and to strengthen our power and to really dig in. How have you been enjoying those 2 weeks apart?
It's been great. You know, I've listened to a lot of music, a lot of the same music over and over again. I've rediscovered that I really like sad music, which I knew before, but I've rediscovered it anyways. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the Tragically Hip are also a good band.
The more you know.
How was your week?
It's been good. I've listened to some music too. I will say, as an addendum to our last episode, I actually listened to Funeral a couple more times, surprisingly, and the album's not too bad. Too late
to
take anything back. And I would never, everything I say is correct. I would never take anything back.
We don't do retractions on this show.
No, but it,
we're never wrong.
It hit. I listened to music too. I started listening to this band called Japanese Breakfast a couple days ago. They're nice. Kind of like an electro pop kind of, electro is not the word I'd use. It's kind of, I call it breezy pop rock in some stages. My suggestion is the track, Everybody Wants to Love You. Yeah. Good song. Anyways, if you haven't noticed, dear loyal listeners, we're going to keep it a little more casual moving forward because we've entered the, the semifinals or the quarterfinals.
No, now we're in the quarterfinals.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're in the quarterfinals now, and we'll be addressing bands that we've already kind of talked about extensively in the first place. We figure we'll keep it a little casual. You already know what's up. You've been listening. You know kind of our major thoughts on these albums. I've also thought we might as well mention some music news. The big sad news this week is that Daft Punk has broken up after their 27 years. This is 93, so whatever that math comes out to. To be fair, the last 10 years have been fairly inactive from them. But Daft Punk officially broke up. It's sad news.
It's real sad. They've been a staple of the electronic community too. Like in like a wider sense, right? Like they've been kind of the pioneers, I would guess, amongst others. Would you say?
Yeah, they certainly They certainly made electronic music cool again. And I remember I just read, because I was reading a lot about them, kind of retrospectives about how they said that they kind of quote made disco cool again, which I think is a fun way to put it. And yeah, I would say if you're curious about a very clear depiction of Daft Punk's influence on music in general, you should check out their 2006 Coachella performance. I was reading a lot and people really give credit to that performance as like popularizing electronic dance music worldwide. It's an intense performance there. There's quite the pageantry to their show. And also the notable collaborations with like Kanye West and The Weeknd of Great Canadian Songbook fame.
That's what he's famous for. You're right.
They've certainly underpinned a lot of popular music in the past 20 years. And then, those influences carried through till now. So yeah, Daft Punk. I've been listening back to some of their music. A really, really good band. Very popular score, or I guess soundtrack, depending on how you want to put it, to Tron Legacy. Basically carries that movie, in my opinion, for the most part. I like that movie, but the music is what you're there for, in my opinion. Their probably most popular album is Random Access Memories, came out in 2013, which is, I guess, technically their last album. Some great guest features. My favorite is Instant Crush featuring Julia Casablancas of The Strokes. I'm a huge Strokes fan, and that's just a sad electronic song. That's us talking about the news, I guess. I don't know. We were talking about Daft Punk before this, and then now here we are talking about it still. But yeah.
Sometimes it has to happen.
Sometimes you gotta talk, yeah. Obviously not Canadian band. They are very, very French. So we won't talk too much about them because we've got a bit and we've got to commit to it. And the commitment to that bit takes us to this week's matchup, which has been, this is when things start going down, in my opinion. we've introduced all of the albums. We've lost quite a few along the way, but now we are really getting into it, into the quarterfinals. And our matchup this week is The Tragically Hip's Fully Completely and it's Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. And as we've talked about this kind of going forward, what we want to do. So this episode isn't like 5 minutes long where we just say this one, we've already talked about those albums twice, in some cases. Or I guess actually not in this matchup, but in some cases we'll have talked about those albums twice already. We can talk a little bit about the albums, but I think we're also trying to dig deeper a little bit and kind of go into the rest of their careers while maintaining that this competition is between the respective albums that we've chosen. But as we've discussed previously, we're already pulling from a larger pool than just the albums in the first place. So we're going to talk about them in a little more detail. Keegan, do you want to kick us off with maybe, I guess, we'll hop right into The Hip and their whole thing? By whole thing, I mean long and successful career.
Yeah, hey, it's actually really interesting. If you put them in comparison now, their time frames are about on par now, 30 years, give or take, within obviously different contexts. With Alanis' most recent album coming out in 2020, and obviously The Hip's last album came out, I believe, in 2016.
Yeah, obviously Alanis is like still making music, whereas The Hip disbanded after Gord Downie passed.
Yeah. So you've got the same sort of, period to look at with The Hip. I mean, I've talked very fondly of them already in this show. In our one episode, I guess we talked about them, and probably at varying points throughout this, I've probably just brought them up regarding like anything. If we were talking about Blue Rodeo, I'd go, well, you know, The Tragically Hip. And no surprise that we've kind of ended up here, in the final eight. If I'm doing math correctly, I'm also not good at math. Anyways, who knows?
As evident, we're also very bad at the actual bracket part of this bracket challenge.
That's been the biggest struggle about getting this entire show together. Fully Completely, this came out, this album was 1992. It's kind of bookmarked by two other really great albums for The Tragically Hip. It's interesting because we talked a lot about how bands have a period of like just greatness where they, you know, they'll go in and they'll just make a couple records back to back where it's just killer. I'll think of other bands that we're going to talk about. I think of Rush from like that 76 or like 75, 76 to like 81, 82 period where they just knocked it out of the park every single time. I think even Neil Young, if you want to look at like the early 70s, like kind of late 60s into the early 70s, really just knocking it out of the park.
And prolific too. They're putting out album after album.
Yeah. Maybe there's a bad track on some of those albums, but like for the most part, when you look back in retrospect, you go, wow, like they really, that was their period. And for The Hip, I think that falls into the same category, honestly. I think their period of about 89 to around 94, 95, they came into their own and they really just knocked it out of the park. I'll say quickly, their later works, typically they've had some popular songs here and there, but for the most part, you'll find that range is probably a good consensus of when they really, really do it well. I kind of write off their first EP, although it isn't bad by any means. It's actually a really strong first EP. it's not their best work. Up to Here, 1989, really great. I think Road Apples was 91, if I'm doing my math correctly, and then Fully Completely 92. So I'm definitely rambling with the context of everything, I do just want to say that Fully Completely is a fantastic record, especially bookmarked within Road Apples, and I believe, Jackson, help me out here.
Day for Night,
which are really fantastic records. I've been listening to this album front to back every night I've been out on the rink. We have one in our park. I've been skating around, shooting some pucks, listening to Fully Completely. And it's really got
how
that
else?
Luster.
What else would you do?
I mean, like, really, I've got a beer in one hand, you know, I take a break, you know, going shooting some pucks. So I'm really hitting the stereotype on the head there. But I can't say enough about this album. I'm a huge fan of it. There's no secret there. So I'll leave some of my thoughts for a little bit from now. But Jackson, I'll let you take it away now here.
Yeah, I'll talk in context. Obviously, if you haven't noticed, like, Keegan clearly has the kind of more like comprehensive knowledge of the hip. But for me, what I found actually really interesting listening to this album is it's been funny. I'll listen to this album like on Spotify on my laptop, and I just have like the autoplay on. So whenever like the album finishes, it just rolls into like just random songs from the hip for the most part. I listen to them, I'm like, oh yeah, this one. And it's just from like a random album from like a couple years before, a couple years after, but like I still know the songs. And this is like, maybe doesn't sound super mind-blowing, but like I'm not like a big hip guy, so to me, when like Bob Kikyan or something like that comes
Bob
on, I'm like, yes, this song, I know this one. Or New Orleans is Sinking, like, yes, of course, a classic. Head by Century, even. They've got like hits throughout, which I think is something that maybe we'll talk about with Alanis later. Like in their later stuff, it gets a little different, but they like, even in kind of like, I think we've agreed that like Fully Completely is the album, is what we picked it in the first place. But like with the hip, I feel like we could have made some other choices here that would have also been worthwhile. I think it's interesting to just to note out anecdotally, like looking at their popular tracks on Spotify, just because I was looking at it to refresh my memory. It's diverse. It's from a couple different it's from several different albums. They're kind of like, they have depth in their catalog, which is kind of maybe the main point I'm trying to get across. And I was really impressed by, like, this is just turning on Canadian radio if you hit the hip. Like, all those hits are one of those things where maybe like now it wanes more where people don't listen to the radio, but like I was still listening to the radio when I was younger, and like you listen to those Canadian stations, these are the songs that come on. And there's a lot of Canadian bands, like Canadian radio could be playing anything, but they're playing the hip because like they're good, and they're like, they have like a diverse set of hits that are all really good songs. So yeah, I guess my kind of main point looking beyond Fully Completely is that they've got hits all over. And by hits, I don't necessarily mean like successful songs, but like songs that I like, because I'm very selfish and good means good for me.
I it's funny when you were talking, I was just scrolling through trying to find some patterns, and I noticed that their ones and their threes on each album are typically their hits. I'll start from 2006 and World Container. I just want to point this out just because I thought it was funny. You're Not the Ocean is not as popular, but number three is In View, the third track, and that's probably their best of that era. I'm going to skip all the live stuff because live stuff. Their number one on Music at Work is Music at Work, which is the most popular song from that album, 2000. Their number three is Lake Fever, which I argue is their second biggest song from that album. Go down to Phantom Power, 1998. You've got Poets as their number one song on the album. Three, Save the Planet, doesn't really fit the pattern, but I'm going to roll with this anyways because I've already started. If you go to Trouble at the Hen House, Gift Shop is number one, which I would argue is one of their best songs. Number three is Ahead by a Century.
Probably Day the most Night. Popular song.
Oh, absolutely. Day for Night. Their great number song. One is Grace 2, which is, again, the best on that album, I think. Number one and three on Fully Completely. I'm rambling here, but Courage is number one, and At the 100th Meridian is number three. Road Apples, number one is Little Bones. Number three is Cordelia. Number one on Up to Here is Blow It High Dough. Number three is New Orleans is Sinking. Anyways, I just noticed that pattern and it really caught me. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But the thing about the hip, I think that, and in part, I think their popularity amongst Canadian radio too, which has done them a great justice, is the fact that they've done so well across so many different albums. And while they have their stronger albums, they still have a few really solid tracks that everybody knows across their entire catalog, which I think is really important and really, really cool.
I think it's also maybe one of those things of being a band that was around in the 90s where you just put out albums. That's just what you do. And they maybe carried on that kind of idea, or maybe they had a couple songs that they should have put out and the rest, maybe not so much, but you just put out albums because that's what you do as a band.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe if you're coming up now, you could release a single or a small EP or two, and that's like a legitimate way to be a successful artist. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't run out of ideas, but they didn't have as many full, they didn't have 12 full ideas. Every time, but they put out albums and I didn't. So who are we to? I guess that's kind of what we're doing here is judging. So that's okay. That's kind of. I think that's we've discussed in the entirety of the Tragically Hip. There, good job. Unless you have anything else to say, we can maybe talk a little bit about Atlantis.
One thing I'll say quickly, just to kind of to shift it over, is that interestingly, the two albums that we have picked are both the only albums for each artist that have been remastered into deluxe versions. Like both Jagged Little Pill and Fully Completely are both their only albums that have been remastered, which I found super interesting. I just thought that was a cool thing to see. And I guess we're kind of maybe on the money in terms of popularity. In terms of those albums, I think we're definitely kind of reading the room right on those. So let's go into Atlanta. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I'd like to hear from you for this, but I will say I didn't listen to a ton of Atlanta, so I took a little pill. And that's partially for the reason that maybe I should give it a shot. But none of her stuff outside of Jagged Little Pill is like nearly as successful or popular as that album, partially because that album is like one of the most popular albums of all time. And it's kind of hard to top that. But also I get the impression that maybe none of her works have quite lived up to that. And maybe that's unfair of me because I haven't listened to it. But the reason why I haven't listened to it is because no one's telling me to listen to anything else. Like all of her big hits are from that album. But I know you have, so I'd like to hear actually about it as opposed to me just going on about how I didn't listen to it.
Yeah, no, you've kind of got it like right on the money there, honestly. She had two albums, but I kind of consider them more EPs before Jagged Little Pill.
They're also very different. Yeah, no.
Yeah, they're not even like we're talking, who's another person who was kind of like that? Was it Shania?
Someone who like leaned really heavy into like being a pop star and then that didn't work out.
I think it might have been Celine, actually, now that I think about it. Anyways, regardless, I just noticed a similar pattern, and we talked a lot about the third album, which is funny, and this obviously is the third album. I think Fully Completely is also the third album if you don't count their beginning EP. Putting into context the rest of her work, Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie is her next album after that. That's 1998, released 11 days before I was born. That one's got Thank You on it, which is another really big song, was huge on the radio. But short of that, to be honest with you, there's not much I would say popular media attention for the rest of her work. You've got Under Rug Swept 2002. It went number one like everywhere. And it did really well. but it just, in terms of like listening power, I just didn't get the same thing from it. So-Called Chaos, Flavors of Entanglement, our next two albums, they do still pretty well, but not to the same level. Havoc and Bright Lights does number one, I think, in the US and Canada, 2012. I'm looking at stats, by the way. I'm not just doing this off the top of my head. Again, that does pretty well, but just not to the same extent. I think it only sold like 92,000 copies in the US in the first week.
Shows you how much digital sales have changed, where you can get a number one album off of 92,000.
It's
sales.
So crazy if you look at that. And that's a whole other like conversation in itself about record sales. But her most recent album came out July 31st, 2020. So last year, Such Pretty Forks in the Road. Very much a ballad album. I actually liked it. I listened to it just before this. I'm going on again, but I really mean to say that like, it's not, I don't even think that the rest of the records are bad, because I listened to a couple songs from each album. I don't even think it's bad. It just doesn't have the same oomph to it and the same power, I think, that Jagged Little Pill does. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of the quality, or like are the perceived quality of songs too, is popular reaction and how they do amongst the general public. It's very clear that the rest of her other records just weren't the same, and they were still going platinum and gold, mind you. So like they weren't doing poorly by any means. So it's still good, but it just doesn't have that same power. And to be honest with you, Alanis, this is a conversation we were kind of having actually at dinner. And we're talking about, you know, Canadian artists versus Canadian artists who become multi-market artists. And with the Hip, obviously, very much so, like they've got their niche, their Canadian artists. But within Alanis, you know, we claim her as Canadian, but she did go into other markets. And I think that's why she did so well in, you know, she did well in those markets. Jagged Little Pill, obviously, being the height of that. I'm not going to offer too much more other than that, just because I don't want to, for the sake of rambling, I don't want to go too far into it. But Jagged Little Pill is certainly the right choice, and definitely the album amongst her general work.
I have a couple different notes that I've thought of while you were talking. The first one is I looked, and I don't know how telling this is, but there are five different versions of Jagged Little Pill on Spotify, all released at different times. So maybe what does that say about kind of trying to continue on that success? I think that's a little telling. My other two notes are actually kind of similar. It's, I think Atlantis, particularly in 1995, is like 100% a right place, right time kind of thing for her, where the kind of like grungy adult alternative like rock scene, particularly like women led, was like very popular in that time. The kind of like a Lilith Fair crowd is super popular around then, and then like 3 years later, 4 years later, they just drop off the face in terms of like popularity. And like her next album comes out 3 or 4 years later, which is like the exact opposite of right place, right time for her. Now, obviously, saying this, her next album went 3 times platinum, which is obviously a success. But I think and that comes across as my next point, which is purely like guessing. I would guess her demographic is one that follows her very closely. It would be like people who were there in 95, really hyped about Jagged Little Pill, and kind of is similar to her age and have kind of grown with her in age, and they've followed her along. And that's also the crowd that still buys CDs and buys albums. So I think that kind of may speak to her longevity in whatever form it is. This is all not to in any way like discredit her like fantastic work, especially specifically on Jagged Little Pill. She's obviously had a successful and happy career, but I think her like kind of days as a celebrity are very specific to the time period in which Jagged Little Pill came out. And it's similar with like all music in like the mid-90s. Like Nirvana like just doesn't like Nirvana's always a touchstone. That's just because they are the musical cultural touchstone of that time, but like Nirvana, how do I put this? They stopped making music at the right time for that band. Cause like,
well, they didn't really have a choice, but like,
let me explain. But like that band, if they keep going for 20 years, like it doesn't really make sense anymore.
Right. No, you're right.
And they fit very specifically in that time frame. And Alanis kind of is similar in my opinion, except like she continues to live, and therefore continues to make music. So I think she's an interesting case of like, she's just so 1995 in my opinion. Yeah. And she's fantastic in 1995. It's just, that doesn't have longevity in my opinion.
No, you're totally onto it there too. And I just did some quick research while you're talking about it too. Garbage, notoriously female led vocalist. Their self-titled album came out in 1995. No Doubts, Tragic Kingdom, 1995. The Cranberries, No Need to Argue, 1994. So like, no, like it's just funny because you're like 100% on. Like it's without a doubt, like you're on. I think the Shania Twain album we talked about was 1995. Sheryl Crow had put out her like big album in 93. It's within the margins, right? Like you're totally onto it. And I know I do this every single episode, but I'm going to compare her to Blink-182. And you know, you think about like if you were to think about Blink-182, what's the time period you think about, like roughly?
That mid-90s.
Mid-90s, kind of like early 2000s, kind of, which 97 to 2003, I would argue, was their, you know, their thing. And at what point, too, like, do you look at a band and you go, their next album, the sales of that album are 100% just riding on what they did with their last album. It doesn't even have to be, like, they can have a single out 3 weeks before the new album comes out, and it can be, like, a pretty good single. And everybody's going to go out and buy that record. And then they go, oh, fuck, this is trash. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't even know if like the follow-up album to like the album can be like used as a margin of success, because I think like diehards will go and buy the album anyways, and it's still going to sell the hell out. Mm-hmm. But it's if you can keep that consistency and like, not to discredit her at all, but the popularity of her songs, I don't think that continues. I think it's like how I'll use a video game reference here. Like Rockstar keeps beating the dead horse of GTA 5 for 9 years and mm-hmm. trying to release that on every other system because they know that it worked. It's kind of like remastering Jagged Little Pill and making it into a Broadway thing. It's not to say that it's bad, because also Broadway, what the hell? But like, you know, it's not to say that it's bad, but it's recognizing that you did something great. And I don't know if the recognition that that's going to happen again is going to come along, right?
It's so tough to like, I don't want to say it's a hard life to be a successful recording artist, but like
drowning in success.
Yeah. Like you put out one of the most popular albums of all time. Like, what do you do next? It's hard.
Yeah. Well, and so I want to ask you something too, because I think this is something that I don't think we've ignored it recently, but I think it's an important thing when we get to this stage. Mm-hmm. Culturally, for Canada, if we're mm-hmm. talking about Canadian music, like I kind of mentioned before how like the Hip are notoriously like a Canadian band, and Alanis is notoriously like just a musician. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, you know, I think once you break into a certain market, you just become an artist and not tied to something specific.
Yeah.
Like if I talk about Lynyrd Skynyrd, they're an American band, but they belong to the South. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's who they belong to. If you talk about the Tragically Hip, they're a Canadian band, but they belong to the North. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to know your take on cultural implication. What that means in this context.
Yeah, I think it's interestingly one of those things that we very selectively decided to care about, at least in the early stages, especially because some of the early albums, there was like no contest really. Like it was hard to be like, well, neither of these albums were recorded in Canada. What do we do? But I think we do have a unique circumstance here where it's hard to get a band more Canadian than the Tragically Hip. And I think that's certainly relevant. Honestly, this is a question that is asked basically everywhere in like Canadian communications, particularly, but also Canadian cultural studies. It's like, what does it mean to be Canadian? And they trick you by asking that question the first day of first year, because there is no answer. It's impossible to tell. It doesn't mean that you like Canada. I don't know. I think you can live in Canada and not like Canada. I think there are many things not to like about Canada. And like, what does it mean to be successful in Canada? Well, if you don't have the means to be successful in Canada, who am I to blame you for going to a larger market and like catching that bag? I'm not. However, I do think there is some sort of tenet to Canadianness, and I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to say into words what those like signifiers are, but whatever they are, the Tragically Hip has it. Very clearly, I think you could easily say they reference Canada in their music. They are a successful Canadian band. I think it's easy to be like, they weren't successful in America, therefore they are Canadian. And I don't know, like, they live in Canada and they continue to like work primarily in Canada. But I don't think that's like hard and tight rules, but I think there are always factors to consider. And when it comes to Alanis, I think she, I guess I shouldn't speak, but I'm just double checking here. Yeah, she's like, she's that Jagged Little Pill is like a global thing. And she kind of continues to exist in kind of just a generic North American market rather as a Canadian.
Yeah. Well, and so that's what the conversation always becomes, right? Like, it's where does the cultural impact intersect with global popularity? Because objectively, if you look at both of these albums, Jagged Little Pill is insurmountably more successful than Fully Completely by the Tragically Hip.
You know, hard to argue that. It's hard to argue that anything is more successful than Jagged Little Pill.
You know, like, it's just a benchmark. It really sets its own standard. But then you look at it from the cultural context. You know, I'm holding up a book. I got Barometer Rising by Hugh McLennan, a Canadian author. And, you know, Courage for Hugh McLennan. That song's all over the airwaves. At the 100th Meridian, specifically, it references a lot of Canada. Looking for a Pace or a Place to Happen. I believe it's got some reference in there too. Locked in the Trunk of a Car refers to the FLQ in Quebec in 1970.
50 Mission Caps about 50, like the Leafs.
Yeah, Bill Barilko on the Leafs. Wheat Kings is about, what's his name? I can never remember his damn name. We learned about him in high school and I feel like a bad person for not knowing his name. I'm going to pull it up just because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
But, where does it, David Milgaard and everything in his freedom for being falsely accused of killing someone back in the 60s, I believe. My point in saying all that is that like it's so like it's just distinctly like the songs are what they are because they're Canadian, but successfully and by a completely different margin, Jagged Little Pill sets the standard.
Yeah, it's hard to have this kind of nuanced conversation about what makes a Canadian artist when the most Canadian artist is staring you directly in the face, in the hip. But it's tough. It's the same way as like watching The Weeknd go up and do that half bowl or not half bowl.
Half bowl.
This is, that lets you know how much I care about football, the Super Bowl halftime show, and you're like, ah, yes. There's my guy. That's my Canadian. And like, yes, but also The Weeknd doesn't like belong to Canada really. No. He is played around the world. He was in a 50 Shades movie. I think maybe that'll be our benchmark.
Yeah. If you can get into a 50 Shades movie, that's how you know you're good. Other than that, you're written off. You're canceled.
Yeah. And then even like I won't get into the halftime show, but like, yeah, it's what is Canadian? Literally, we mentioned this in the first episode. and I don't know, it's hard to tell, but there's one thing I know. It's that the Tragically Hip is incredibly Canadian.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like vocalize, like, because I think simply referencing like a country is like pretty clear that you know what's going on in Canada. But like, I feel like there's more to it. It's just articulating it has been hard.
Yeah. And you know, it's just one of those things where like I'm trying to rationalize a case for Alanis, because I think when I think about Canadian identity, I'm like, like you just can't beat the hip, because like, it's just ingrained. You know what I mean? I think next week, arguably, it's going to be more difficult, a lot more difficult, I think, than this conversation, in my opinion. And that's hard for me to say, because I just know the reality of what that conversation is going to look like. And I can see you going, oh.
And, double checked, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so my gut, you know, always leans towards, if we're talking about Canada, like there's just names that come to mind, right? And I think the Hip are one of those. I think Rush are one of those. I think, you know, more recently, I think the Arkells have become a part of that conversation too. Like there's just names that you associate. I mean, actually the best case in terms of size that I'll maybe compare it to is like, if you think of Irish music, name the two bands you think of right away.
The Eurythmics and the Cranberries. I think those are both Irish. Oh, that's gonna be really awkward if they're not.
Well, no, you're right. Cranberries are definitely Irish. The Eurythmics, I'm not too sure, but like the Cranberries are that conversation, right? I would have said you too, but
yes, yeah,
yeah. So there you go. But like Codaline, I think, is another one that I think they're Irish too. But you just think of names. I think of Ireland because like it's a smaller music market, kind of similar to Canada, and like that's kind of where my head goes. So, I mean, you know, but I'm sure that if you were to, for example, I'm just throwing stuff at the wall here. If you were to have a conversation about the top 24 Irish albums of all time, you might make a case for some musicians against others. But ultimately, your conversation's probably going to come down to you two and the Cranberries. You know, like, how do you get away from it?
Yeah, it's I think there's also something to the Tragically Hip being such a, it's like the snake eating itself, where like they are Canadian because they are Canadian, because they are Canadian, they've become more Canadian in terms of popularity. It's one of those where like you plant the kernel and then like the quote unquote, the culture kind of runs with it. And like you think of how like governments as well are like building and promoting culture. And I'm sure Justin Trudeau was like a fan of the Tragically Hip, but like he made a super big deal about that final concert, probably because he's a fan, but also like he looks at this major Canadian band and goes, this is Canada. We can share this with the world and prove that we are singularly important in this musical world as well. So like the creation of culture is both like a product of like people doing things, but also the idea that like we need to have a culture and therefore someone's going to put it together. And the Hip is there, and you just like, they get catapulted through
it's,
government
it's
in some
just
ways.
A even, cycle,
even
yeah.
Even through like the radio, which has obviously greatly helped their popularity.
Yeah. And like, what were the numbers of that CBC show? Tragically,
it's like a third of the country watched that.
I'm pretty sure it was
like,
it was in the double digits of millions. I'm pretty sure. I think it was something like 11.7 million Canadians.
There's about 33 million in the world.
Yeah. If we're averaging it out, we're about a third of the population. Like, come on. Like, not to discredit Alanis Morissette. But if she had a final concert like that, I would say she'd probably get a couple million viewers. 11.7 million? Dude, Rush wouldn't even get that if they would have known.
Hockey,
you know what I mean?
That's hockey numbers. That's like...
that blows hockey numbers out of the water. That's like Olympics level.
Yeah, that's right? What I meant. I'm thinking of the 2010s Olympics.
Yeah, I think that was actually like 16 million or something. Like, it was stupid. But you know, so you place it in that context, and I mean, like, I'm essentially just kind of talking myself in circles right now, and I think you might be kind of
doing
the
same as well, yeah.
But you know, it's just it's not even unfortunate. I was gonna say it's unfortunate that that's like how the conversation becomes, but it is like that's just the way it is, right? Like, someone becomes so tied to national identity. Like, I think there's even like there's a Scotiabank commercial that I absolutely despise right now that uses A Head by a Century, like a dumb cover of it. and I hate it. I despise it. But, you know, it's talking about, oh, helping Canadians and this and that. You've got Tragically Hip playing in the background, and it's like Scotiabank, which is, yeah, you know, it just fulfills itself. So I'm going to leave it at that. I think that's kind of gotten my point across. Jackson, what are your thoughts?
No, I 100% agree. I just think I've become more and more fascinated by like the Tragically Hip being used as like a tool to promote Canadianness by like the government. I think is very interesting, and like as a tool to like sell insurance or whatever banks do. Oh,
I hate it so much. For the record,
it's very interesting. Yeah, the answer's got to be fully completely here. I don't think we have to go back and talk about the music, because we did that already. But like that album's obviously great. They both are. We talked about those before, which is why we're not like doing it right now.
Yeah, and it all depends on context, right? Like I think, you know, if you're talking about the great, like this is a super like semantic category, but like, you know, you talk about the greatest North American albums of all time. You know, as soon as you take the Canadian context away from it, Jagged Little Pill takes it. Mm-hmm. You know, because that if you're having a different conversation, it's an entirely different thing. But as soon as you're putting national identity into it, there's just groups that you can't get away from. The same with like if you're talking about, you know, the United States, you're talking about Springsteen, you're talking about Lynyrd Skynyrd, like those are the groups that you talk about, right? And so it's and once you change the context, the conversation changes.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I mean, I think we've decided that it's fully completely over Jagged Little Pill. An interesting conversation. I think this is a pretty good format to take for this. Yeah. Cause we're talking about albums. We're also talking about bands and like culture and stuff. So we don't have to be like, the way they change tune, in that song. Ooh, you hear them strings. I don't think either of these albums really have string sections, but
I mean, we can certainly take that approach if you want to. No, I just don't know if it'll be that entertaining.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. Therefore, I don't see anyone else. So yeah, that's that then. Two very good albums there. The Hip takes over Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. So yeah, there's that. Looking forward into next week. We're looking to take on City in Colors, Bring Me Your Love, going up against Rush's Moving Pictures. We are really doing we're really doing this Canadian album thing. It's a real, real deal here. So yeah. I just
Go for it.
I said no. I was talking about the Cranberries twice. Made me think of their big hits, Zombie. I'm a big fan of Dreams, though. You should listen to Dreams, really people good out there. Yeah. So it's a good song. Yeah, I was literally just looking at the Cranberries right now. I was like, Dreams is a good song. What do you got?
Oh, no, I actually kind of not forget, but I think next week will easily be the most difficult matchup that we've had to talk about for me.
I agree.
Out of everything I think we will talk about and everything that we have, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, for the past 3 weeks, I've been falling asleep with Bring Me Your Love in my ears. And then today I was just on a Rush kick again, and I'm like, ooh, I'm not going to enjoy this episode. So,
yeah. We keep talking about how like short these are going to be moving forward, but they might get longer as the matchups get tougher. But yeah.
Hey, 40 minutes here, not bad.
Yeah, we really took a little sleep, and we got stuck with Daft Punk at the beginning, which is fun. Maybe we'll do a little bit of that. Not too much, because we don't need to bore people with random thoughts. But if
only
I see
exclusively Daft Punk, we're only going to talk about
Daft. Yeah, we'll talk about Daft Punk next week too. Everyone do their homework. Listen to Around the World. Good song by Daft Punk. Anyways, so yeah, what do you think? Dear listener, Tragically Hip, Alanis Morissette. Did we get it wrong? Let us know. You can reach it. I was gonna throw to the Instagram just as like a fun little thing, but I'm pretty sure it's GCS_. I can't remember what it is.
I can't remember what I made. I think it's GC Songbook.
Like, yeah, I think you're right.
At GC Songbook. And where else can we now be found, Jackson Wells?
You can find us on any podcast platform of your choice. Probably. It's definitely on Spotify. I've checked that. But it should be on everything else. So if you're a big Pockets Cast fan, you can listen there. If you like Podbean, check us out there.
Yeah.
Stitcher? I'm trying to think of podcast apps.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them, but you should be able to, if not, it's a very easy for us to just put in a little link there and it'll be added there. But yeah, so let's say you're unable to listen live at 7 o'clock every Friday. You can check us out on any of those services. We're still on the Radio Laureate website, of course, as well, if you are a big fan of web browsers. But I figure it might be easier for people to check us out on their preferred podcast platform. But yeah, five stars. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.
Oh my God, we can do that now?
I don't think you can like things on podcasts, but close enough. Yeah, check us out there. Or you've already gone through an episode of this show on there, so this is redundant. Keegan, do you have any final words on this or anything else?
Mill Street Organic, very good. You should drink it. Don't support Mill Street because there's a whole hip thing going on right now. Never mind. I take it back. Ignore the comment.
I remember this.
Yeah.
A wheat something or
They have the 100th Meridian Mill Street Lager, but the thing is they didn't, it's not in partnership with the hip, and people associate 100th Meridian in Canada with the hip, and so they're arguing that, which I agree with, but they're arguing that like they're taking our thing. I shouldn't have bought this. I don't know. I'm supporting them.
I was gonna say support good Canadian products, but maybe not.
What are they brewing?
Here is my final note for this show. Just because it's Canadian doesn't mean it's good. With that, Canada, have a great night.